is there anything you want to tell the public about Innovation Law Lab and the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So Innovation Law Lab, we're housed here in Portland, Oregon. We are a local nonprofit. We are engaged with the local immigration advocacy community, and we are building a community, a collaborative of deportation defense, where we're working in the immigration court here in Portland, and we're also actively engaged with all organizations that are doing the RAIDS Rapid Response Network. And we believe that it's really important to Portland and to the state of Oregon that we create and maintain an inclusive community. If anybody would be interested in engaging with us, we are looking for attorneys, we are looking for activists, we are looking for Spanish speakers, speakers of other languages that might be spoken by the refugee and immigrant populations, and anybody else that wants to just educate themselves about what this situation looks like so that we can continue to spread this message and make sure that we create the community of love that we all want to live within.
All right. And again, that's Ian Philibon, Program Director of Innovation Law Lab. Ian, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks so much for having us.
It was great talking with you.
You as well.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Women Helping Women Project on Saturday, October 21st at 6 p.m. at the IBEW Local 48 in Portland. The Women Helping Women Project is a fall celebration that features a salmon dinner, art sale of original art, silent auction, entertainment, and Native American drumming. Proceeds from this event will help the Red Lodge Transition Center for Women in Clackamas County purchase a heat pump and complete other weatherization projects. Again, that's the Women Helping Women Project on Saturday, October 21st at 6 p.m. at the IBEW Local 48, 15937 Northeast Airport Way in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Journalist, author, and activist David Barsamian will be speaking about the broad coalition in opposition to the Trump administration, which includes activists from a range of causes, progressive Democrats, and concerned Republicans. He'll be reflecting on the core issues at stake today and why so many people from such a range of identities and perspectives are challenging the administration. Again, that's KBOO Presents David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
All right, the time is 6:02 and you're listening to KBOO Portland. And coming up next, it's the presidential, it's Cutie Pock talk coming up next, but a special remix of the presidential election song will kick it off. So enjoy, KBOO.
Swing the remix, God! Welcome to Cutie Pock Talk, folks, where we invite you to sit down and listen to what's shaping our queer and trans community of color here in Portland. I'm Darian Jones.
I'm Zealous Marchant.
And today we've got a special guest with us, the amazing Babatunde Azubeki. Can you say hello, Babatunde?
Hello.
And so Babatunde is probably one of the coolest black, queer, trans, southern, femme organizers from Georgia that I think I've ever met here in Portland. And that is taken directly from your bio I found online.
Sure is.
And so just so our listeners know, today's show is kind of going to be centered around this notion of the, quote, house and field Negroes, unquote, and kind of queer culture and the expectations that have been kind of placed upon black folks in the community. So, you know, in short, it's just going to be like a community forum to really discuss what's going on in Portland here in this kind of interesting time that we've been in lately. And so if you are out there listening, which we are certain you are, because that's how you're getting this voice in your ears right now, please send us a Facebook message if you got questions and you want us to talk about on air. Do it. So Zelos, I'm not gonna like put you on the hot seat.
You're going to put me on the hot seat.
No, that's what we do here. I never do anything
we
like
shock
that.
Shock and amaze.
I know it. It's kind of like, yeah, just like
just any, do it. Make it quick.
So you know, I mean, I just want to say, you know, a lot of this, the notion and kind of thing that inspired this episode is from, I want to say, a conversation that you and I had, mainly some stuff that was going on. And I know there was another conversation from a former guest, Cameron Witten, online. Witten. That was from a, I think it was a talkback conversation. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I wonder if you want to just lead us into some of like what your thoughts around this house and field Negro is. And maybe we can just maybe explain to our listeners out there who have no concept of what
that
the
probably
difference
would be a good
is.
Place to start. I mean, I want to just dig right in, but then we should remember, maybe people don't know.
Yeah, no, I gotta educate people. Don't.
Okay, I don't know where to start. You did. You put me in the hot seat. It's toasty.
Yeah, it's on
it's
fire.
It's a little on fire. Well, yeah, Cameron Witten did a talk back, and there was, if I remember right, like a huge thread about his experience in that, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of like white feedback about that, and there was lots of like different segments of the POC community feeding back on that. And it was really essentially, I guess it was just kind of inflaming, where there was this discussion of like who's supposed to do all the work. And Cameron was in this, he dealt with it really beautifully, but mm-hmm. We can, I guess, go into that, but more in a minute. But the house and field Negroes, not that I've got a PhD in house and field Negrology.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Other than the fact that I'm living it, or we're all living it. But the concept is, and the power structures are, you've got those who are of color working inside the construct or the house with the oppressors, and what they're getting out of it is the feeling of being seen. Maybe they get some perks about it. They get to have their opinions heard. Not that that represents the whole community, you know. And then there's the field Negroes who are still out there doing the work, who are, you know, ideally not sacrificing who they are. They're still resisting. They're the ones that are still, though, also underfoot, you know, and not utilized or tokenized by this larger structure is one aspect of it.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I mean, you're absolutely right. And that kind of makes me want to ask you and maybe Babatunde here, how do you feel about this kind of quote from Malcolm X around the house and field Negro, and how the house Negro always looks out for his master, and when the field Negroes get too much out of line, he held them back in check?
I've got so many feelings. Babatunde, you go.
Yeah, I've got a lot of feelings about that, but I mean, I think that it's all about context. I think that back then, you know, a lot of like people who would be seen as house Negroes, which would be ultimately the people who are closest in proximity to whiteness, so light-skinned folks, right, white passing people, at that time were just existing within the system that was seeking to exploit their bodies and labor and things like that. I can say that as a light-skinned person, I am definitely not got, first of all, no master. Second of all, using whatever privilege I have to dismantle white supremacy at every opportunity and every step. So, yeah.
I just remembered, Darren, what you wanted me to talk about. You were looking at me like you were. To tie off what Babatunde said, like I think what we were talking about also was just the shade throwing inside activism, and I think that's a really hot topic right now. Where I mean, it's natural to have communities grow and then like implode or explode, and that happens a lot. But I feel like really right now we're revisiting themes like Malcolm X was talking about and that activists before have experienced and talked about, where, you know, there are people who do side-eye activism because they, if, you know, there's this whole like, we're going to we might not solve this in our lifetimes, but we're just going to do everything we can to resist and continue to break these structures down. But the issue is it's so complex because it can be the very people you're working alongside with that are being house Negroes about it and going, well, I'm, you know, they're using the language, which is another issue, like the language, you know, words like oppression and, you know, I don't know, that are more prescriptive than anything, you know, because at the end of the day, they just want to be beholden to the structures that are keeping them what they say safe. You know, alternately, I think there's the complexities of like the activism where people are saying, well, I hate social justice warriors, even in my own community, because like, what is that going to do to solve the issues now? You know, I want my issues solved now. It puts us in the line of fire, the way that you're pushing back all the time. And how does that solve anything? What is my Venmo account going to do for me? You know, but that's real. Like it's really dividing families and communities as we speak. So there it is, the house Negro, field Negro conundrum of sorts, and the gray area between. I don't know. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm not. It's just, that's just kind of putting me down this like side tangent in my mind around just how our country's, the nation's response to activism or organizing in the past few months, just kind of as more people have been, quote, activated by, you know, actually seeing the news and reading a piece of paper that, you know, that is actually backed by facts and not just someone's opinions. And so, you know, I've heard different stories from kind of a spectrum of racial identities of how people's families have started to ostracize them simply just for being political. And it's just kind of interesting when we think about it in the Black culture with kind of how people get side-eyed around, like, you know, you're the uppity person just because you're actually someone who has been able to see trauma and has probably experienced trauma in your life through actually doing organizing work, and you're able to call it out. And I don't know kind of like what the response is going to be if more people are going to get activated. So that's kind of what your statement was making me stare at you. I wasn't side-eyeing you.
I couldn't tell. I was like, you asked me to say something.
Yeah. No. It's just kind of a really deep.
It is really deep.
Have you experienced things like that in Atlanta or from the South, Babatunde? Because it seems, in Portland, it's really visible, I would say, the like active side-eyeing from other communities or within the Black community too.
People side-eye all the time in the South, first of all. But I do think that in the South, things are a little bit different because of the legacy of the civil rights era, and just activism is kind of like interwoven into our culture. A lot of it stems from like faith communities as well, because that's how people mobilized back then, is like activating in the church. And, you know, I think that a lot of people, whether they have the language for it, actually understand like the personal is political, and that's how they operate. But I think that even folks outside of activist circles are, you know, activated, just not in a way that's like always visible to people. You know, there are people down South, Southerners on new ground, who do like a lot of like really, really radical dope stuff in ways that maybe don't come across is like organizing, like helping to bail out mamas on Mother's Day, you know, or having people like go through neighborhoods to like support people that are, you know, on drugs and like looking for other ways outside of like gang culture and things like that. So there's a little bit more legacy there. I will also say that like I've only been in Portland for like 9 months. So, you know, I wanna follow those who have been here longer and listen to a little bit more about the history, you know?
Yeah.
I'm from Nashville. My dad's from Alabama. My family's back there. So it's interesting to hear you talk about the churches and the activism history and the South and how it's different. And I do feel that. I come from a family of Bible belters who've, most of them, at least as far as like the my internal family, is like written me off because they're completely like, nope, you're going to hell. And I'm like, that's great. Well, at least it'll be toasted.
I mean, that's another part of it too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but it's really interesting to me the overtness of the South. Like whenever I go home to visit and then I'm reminded like, oh, at least you know where you stand.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I almost wanted to say there's a certain comfort in that and yet not, where it's like it wears off pretty quick. Like, oh, I don't know which is worse, the overt nature here, like side-eyeing, that kind of like goes, is biological, I feel.
Yeah.
Black and brown people. It's like, I'm pretty sure they'd find a genetic code. It's something, the side-eye gene.
The side-eye gene.
Right. Totally. And then here in the North, I really hate the passive aggressiveness that is in every single aspect of, getting to know people. There's like a lot of microaggressions. No one's really forward about anything. And if you are, it's completely overshadowed or dovetailed with like aggression or xenophobia or whatever, because it's just making them so uncomfortable, even though everyone's doing the same thing. To me, you know, I don't see any difference between the South and the North, except in terms of how they're delivering that discrimination that we're all fighting. And, I don't know. I have a different experience. Like my dad, I've mentioned, like almost joined the Black Panthers, and we definitely had like all that literature and on our bookshelf, and like lots of other Black activists, Indigenous activists, you know. And yet, I don't really like. He's of the whole like pray it away kind of ilk, you know. And that's really a strong. That's a strong thread.
No doubt.
And I definitely have, my brother is definitely like, he's definitely of the whole, like, this is ridiculous, the activism thing. Like, what is that going to solve now? You're just on a soapbox and that whole thing, it's not helping me. And yet I'm watching him and other community members get, you know, hurt, and they, you know, they're working for the structure, or like being inside the house, as it were, isn't doing anything. So it's like, why are you hating so much on your very own community? And like, why is everybody, from my perspective, I'm really just like, why is everyone using language as a weapon so bad, or so quick to blame when it's structural, what's going on? And it's, you know, super complex. Anyway.
I mean, no, that's...
I really can't tell if you're side-eyeing or not.
I'm not side-eyeing.
We're both looking down at our laptop notes, but things. Still.
Well, no, because I mean, first when you were like, I'm from Tennessee, I was like, oh, we're like a triangle. We're Georgia,
kind of our triangle.
Mississippi, Tennessee, we're missing Alabama.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of, that just makes me, the end of what you were saying around how folks end up looking inside out, and then still creating the foundational structures that contribute to the oppression of like Black and brown people, and how it just brought me to the film, and I can't think of the name, with Denzel Washington, where he's the cowboy crusader who comes in the inn of the house to rescue his wife, and there was another Black man who was the house Negro, and he was like, and he was like basically this huge figure who, like, even after Denzel took him down and was like, I'm trying to free all these slaves, the house Negro was still trying to keep them from getting out and getting free, and he was still supporting his master. And so it's really interesting to see how committed people are to these ideas of this reality that doesn't include them. And that's essentially where your statements were putting my mind, Zelos. Yeah. So I'm not side-eyeing, I promise.
Just teasing you. I think there's just like an intense look, you know, but I think I have it too. And right now, honestly, I'm at a point where I'm just like, I don't even want to date any activists. I can't do this anymore. I'm not getting any rest because there's just a whole lot of performativeness, mm-hmm. right? Like, let's get real about That's it. So and I'm real. Seeing that where it's like, you know what? I'm in it to really win it. And even though we probably won't actually win it because it's going to be a forever process, but I'm really sick of the prescriptiveness and the performativeness, mm-hmm. or it's like, you know, we've just formed one more clique is right. what it looks like to me, and we're all talking oppression and like beloved this and beloved that and like action this and action that and decolonizing this and decolonizing that, and it's like, but we're not really, because you're just then exclusionary and then creating another colonistic structure right. wherein you are inverting the meanings of these things for mm-hmm. your own gain mm. and then telling everybody else that their experience is wrong. And it's like, you should really just shut up about that. Like, yes, I know we all just want to be free, but it's at a point now where it's like, I feel like you are just then serving the master again, because mm. you're making it look like you're reclaiming, but what's really happening in our communities is it's the same thing. It's like we're gaining some wisdom, but I don't feel like we're really moving forward in every very real meaningful way. And I know it's incredibly, like we keep mentioning the word complex, incredibly complex, because there is some really severe political views that cross-section this. I mean, we've got separatism that's re-happening. I don't think it ever really went away, but mm-hmm. that's happening also. And that, you know, all these things overshadow just then people's interpersonal relationships, which, you know, for me, I'm looking at this whole thing going, we're human. The idea is to be human, right? Like, instead of going, well, this is my identified, like, cultural thing and here's my language for it. And if you don't follow that, then you're not for freedom, mm-hmm. you know. And that just smacks of conformity to me, which is like the house nigger mm-hmm. thing. Like, does it really, like, it should be on a case-by-case basis. Yes, there's an ideal, yes, there's a standard, but it's just getting out of hand in my mind and away from the main goal, which is to be free.
I think the main goal is liberation,
right?
Yeah. And I don't know if it's freedom.
Liberation. Wasn't
that, is freedom like one step below liberation? Did I not use a powerful enough word?
You got it. No.
Because I meant liberation. Like, freedom.
I think,
no bonds.
We've had a really deep conversation mm. around just the difference between freedom and liberation. I don't know if you want to speak to it.
Mm. I mean, for me, just on a very like primal level, like, I don't feel freedom, you know, when I say it, when I talk about it, I don't feel freedom. But when you say liberation, I'm like, oh, I feel that in my heart, I feel that in my blood, I feel that in my bones, you know. So that's kind of the difference for me. And to me, like, liberation is like absolute.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I feel mm-hmm. it. It's like a little more, it's got a little bit more teeth, you know. Freedom to me implies something that can be taken away, whereas liberation cannot be taken away.
It's empowering. Yeah. Go for it.
I think we're gonna have to go to our first break here, yeah. so that folks can listen to this number one jam right now, I would say, good. In the song. U.S. of A.
Yes.
And just, well, I love this song too. but here we go.
It's supposed to be Bodak.
Bodak Yellow by Cardi B, y'all. I found a clean version online. Because y'all know
I was blown away by that.
Before 9 p.m., we can't play explicit music here on KBOO, but we can play the top song in America right now yep. for everyone who is really tuning in to our amazing show.
Yep. Kyle's bringing that up.
And I know.
Any minute now.
Kyle is so amazing.
Kyle
and we're
is amazing.
We're really lucky
best
to have this amazing board op. And this is also a great time for me to do our plug. As folks may have known in our last episode of Cutie Pock Talk is recruiting new hosts yep. and co-hosts, volunteers, guests. So if you would like to be a participant of the Cutie Pock Talk Collective, you can reach out to us via our Facebook, which is the letter Q, the letter T, POC, talk, all one word, collective. I mean, that's like if you do the forward slash, it's all that in one word. And then, or you can email cutiepocktalk@gmail.com. and we will get you. Or you can call KBOO, and I'm sure they will pass along a message to say, hey, so-and-so reached
Kyle's
out to you.
Kyle's throwing his arms up in the air.
Kyle's throwing his arms up. So, Kyle, I think it's all good, Kyle. I think I would love for our listeners to listen
to
Mi Gente with the amazing... Just Beyonce. Just
we're gonna go to Beyonce.
Let's go to Beyonce.
I mean, J Balvin is cool.
I know. I like J Balvin.
La fiesta la llevo en mis genes. Yo soy la reina de los nenes.
Mi música los tiene fuerte bailando y se baila así.
La fiesta no para, apenas comienza. C'est comme c'est, c'est comme ça. Ma chérie, la 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 la.
Francia, Colombia,
Houston,
freeze. J Balvin, Willie William,
Beyoncé,
freeze. Los DJ no miente, le gusta mi gente y eso se fue muy bien. No les bajamos, mas nunca paramos. Es otro palo y
piano. ¿Y dónde está el gigante? Me fue a bouger la tête. Azul, are you with me? Say yeah, yeah, yeah.
Un, dos, tres,
yeah, 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 yeah. In the ocean, and it's a Creole, and my body's like a potion. I can be a beast, or I can give you emotion. Please don't question my devotion. I've been giving birth on these haters, cause I'm fertile. See these double C's on his back, murder. One more double D's in his bed, certain. If you really love me, make an album about me, word up. Soon as I walk in, boys start they talking. Right as that booty sway,
freeze.
Lift up your people, from Texas, Puerto Rico, my lens to Mexico.
¿Y dónde está el gigante?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Me fue a bouger la tête.
Esquina,
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 y ahí nos vamos. El mundo es grande, pero lo tengo en mis manos. Estoy muy duro, sí, ok, ahí vamos. Y con el tiempo nos seguimos elevando. Y que seguimos rompiendo aquí. Esta fiesta no tiene fin. Botellas para arriba, sí.
La gente no se detiene,
¿y dónde está mi gente? Me fue a bouger la tête.
Azul, are you with me?
Say yeah, yeah, yeah.
Un, dos, tres,
luego.
Hot.
Hello and welcome back to Cutie Pock Talk. So I got to apologize to everybody because that Cardi B error was totally on Darian.
It wasn't Kyle. Sorry, Kyle.
No, it was me sending, like, just not even sending the right link at all. I'm not even sure.
That's all right.
Yeah, I just put it in one place.
It'll happen.
It happens. I'm only human, and 10 times out of 9, so is Beyonce.
Oh, God.
Just so y'all know.
Maybe it's because your moon is in Scorpio.
Yeah.
I'm actually, just kidding. I don't believe in astrology. I don't.
Okay, let's change the subject. I think something that we wanted to do was kind of explore that list of topics. Yeah. And I feel bad because maybe we should have another show with Cameron to explore his list. Because
yeah, we can have him back.
Yeah, maybe. kind of just some ideas that were presented online by Cameron after a race talk conversation for the some actions that white allies can take to do better at racial justice. And so just curious as to maybe, because I know this has been a topic folks have posed as questions for us and things that I generally get in my life as a person of color walking around Portland. How can I do better? So, we're going to just chat about these and maybe expand on the list a little bit for people to go a little bit more in depth and maybe add some addendums. And it looks like the first topic item on the list is around reparations. And quote, white people should be giving as much of their time, money, and power at least match how they talk about and around racism. End quote. I agree with that.
Yeah. Reparations is such a broad term.
Do you think it's a loaded word?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Totally. Like, as the thread in Cameron's page would attest, there's a lot of, like, contesting with the Venmo and with, like, the side eye, like, oh, what's that gonna do? And that was complex. So I think Cameron was like, we're not even talking about this directly on Facebook, but here's some of my list, my things to do. But I believe in it, but I also feel like it's in one more complicated, stupid thing where there's people then who just use that to tokenize, like they throw resources and do whatever they can to say, like, protect certain house Negroes, you know, or people of color. They do. They're like, you know, I guess that's just like the white savior complex. You call it that. But there are people that were like, look at all this money that I'm giving, or look at all this time, look at all the effort that I'm, look at everything that I'm doing to stand up for, like, these three people or this one person or this cause or that cause. But at the end of the day, in their interpersonal relationships, they're the worst. Mm-hmm. They're not doing anything. So I believe that adds to liberation, absolutely, because we're talking about hundreds of years of dehumanization and not being able to build security, emotional, financial, all that stuff. But I'm at the same time, I am reserved, going, well, with the caveat of, you know, you don't get to pick your crusade, you know, white people, which happens all the time, everywhere, and especially here in Portland. It just makes me ill. So that was the look you saw on my face.
I mean, that kind of, it's interesting to think about, for me, just the word reparations and how people respond to just like the word around it, and kind of this notion that, you know, I wasn't around during slavery and my ancestors weren't slave owners and I didn't do anything to contribute to slavery or racism, and so I'm not a part of the system at all. And I think it's really not that black and white and clear for people to understand, where you also have, like, the general population of black people who are, quote, African-American in America were enslaved. And today, I think there was a study done by the Pew Research Center in 2015 around the median income for black families being like $1,700. Like, of the wealth, like generational, like actual family wealth. And I think the average number for white family households was like 200,000 or something.
What?
Yeah, it was like, it was kind of ridiculous. I think it might even be like a higher number. I don't want to like misquote, but it was like significantly more. And so it's interesting when people are kind of detested by the idea of like reparations being this extra thing, or like offering something that they made no commitments to or have agency around, when it's really kind of thinking about acknowledging the disparities that have been created in society, right? And the disproportionate number of people of color who don't have access to opportunities or no access to engage in the world. And so when folks are like, oh, I can't support this cause, or like, I don't want to, why do Black Lives Matter? It's interesting, I guess, for me, just the way people view their engagement with racism in the context of today's society, where, like, you know, slavery's gone, people aren't racist, but that's not really the telltale. And I mean, it's kind of true when you look at today with the Muslim ban that kind of was pushed away again, and how it just has these different eyes. But I feel like I'm leading us off around, and I just want to kind of tie this back into, you know, the context of these questions that we have, these, like, this list of stuff, which the next one is around rounding up your white friends to, like, support communities of color. But I don't want to cut you all off before.
No, I love what you said, because, no, that's great. I think you put it really succinctly. I want emotional reparations. Like, sure, money and feed me, that's great, you know, but I think for me personally, I want to be seen and to allowed to be human in all my queerness and transness and brownness or whatever, just to be seen. I don't want to have it be a label, and don't pay me unless you really mean it, you know, and that's what I want above all. So I love what you mentioned, that reparations can be many things. It's not just, you know, financial. It's about like what's going on, you know, at ground zero and in our relationships. That would be rad. But I don't think a lot of people want to do the work for that. But that's what would, I think when people say, what does that Venmo mean to me? Because when they leave their front door, it doesn't change the fact that they might be shot at or harassed or any of that. And I concur. Or save them from losing their job because people are discriminating against them, or this or that, the other thing. Like, they want emotional reparations. And those are just as full of currency.
At minimum, I think reparations for people of color are the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Which people of color don't get. Like, really ever.
Right.
Did you have something you were trying to chime in on here, Babatunde?
Get in here.
Yeah, reparations is really complicated. So I guess like where I'm looking at reparations from, like, I'm like, absolutely, give me some money. Give me money. I need money. My family needs money. You know, my community needs money, because I feel like we're not talking about true revolution unless we're talking about like economic justice and economic stability, because that's, we still exist. Under capitalism, hopefully it'll fall soon, but I mean, you know, we got some time. I think also too, like, reparations only go so far, because I think about, you know, how the occupation of folks here in the United States on indigenous land, and like what we've given to the indigenous communities, and you know, those communities are still suffering and trying to be seen and trying to fight for a voice. So I think that it's a very, very interesting, it requires a lot of nuance when you're talking about it. But in terms of like the Venmo stuff, you know, the community that I come from, like the Black, queer and trans community, people are just trying to eat every day. People are just trying to have a place to sleep. And, you know, somebody putting in $20, $50, $100 in that Venmo is the difference between, you know, a Black trans woman, you know, potentially being murdered on the streets versus like her being able to like find some sort of stability. So I think it's all about context and what we're talking about, you know. But regardless, white people are still complicit under white supremacy and benefit from it, whether they had slaves or not. So, yeah.
That's the bigger picture, right?
For real. Yeah. I just think it's awesome that we're having a discussion where it's context-based. I just want to say it's really refreshing. But it's true. Yeah. And then the money, I'm not saying that money doesn't matter. Like, I'm privileged to be in a situation for now where I have healthcare and can get the surgeries that I have upcoming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was looking at, like, what will I have to do to get these,
that's,
you know,
so real. That's so real.
You know, and I'm still just like, yeah, you know, you never know what's going to happen from one day to the next. So it's always on my mind. So it's, it is real and it's true. And yeah. So anyway, obviously the feels are going to start tearing up. It's real.
I mean, we could honestly just do a whole show about reparations.
We really could. We really, really, really could. We probably should. Let's make a note of that.
Yeah. We can definitely put that on our topic list.
Yes. Yeah. I will say that, you know, being from the South and being a new transplant here, this is one of the places where, like, white guilt can equal money. Doesn't really, because people down South, they're like, yeah, whatever, we don't care. Mm-hmm. So keep it moving. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's something to think about.
Yeah, that's another subject right there. What can white guilt do for you?
Exactly.
It's a whole another show. Darian, keep looking at me.
It just reminds me of living in Beaverton.
I knew you were gonna go somewhere. I was thinking that too. I live in Beavertron.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, right, yeah. So I was thinking, why kill?
It's live and live it there.
Yeah. It's a special tulip filled that.
Which is why all the folks out there in the Tron who have their white guilt, who are not like in Portland quote proper. You know,
you count.
You count, which is why we're going to look at list item number 2, which is round up your white friends. You know, white people are doing a great, quote, service for people of color if they round up all their white friends, not lock them up, but actually educate them about the harm that white supremacy does for communities of color. And I think that's a pretty real and most helpful suggestion ever, because I remember I went to that. I think maybe I spoke about this on a different episode because I was still really heated from this community forum I went to that was around the election and like how people were just so fired up. They didn't know what they wanted do. And I just wanted to get some information around like how I can be helpful and not just be like sitting at home avoiding all the people who are just not making it easy to live life. Mm-hmm. And so I went to this forum and somehow ended up teaching a bunch of white people why they shouldn't hate their cousin Earl who lives in Medford because Earl voted for Trump and he's just so appalled that he could vote for Trump and Trump is awful and he doesn't want to talk to Earl anymore.
Oh, God.
And how the issue isn't really Earl at this point, it's him, because he's potentially the only person that can talk to Earl because he himself is a white man who is Earl's family, who can reach him. And that's not something I can do as a person of color because Earl probably wants to kill me in the fact that he literally voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So it's, I would say the most helpful thing that white people can do is teach their other comrades who are white folks how to not engage in white supremacy so actively, or to at least understand what they're doing when they're doing it. Because, you know, for me, I went to this session to just be like, what can I do? Because I was just like, oh, maybe I can go, I don't know.
Wait, you were just attending?
I was just attending. Oh, and then I ended up facilitating this group for like an hour. And I was like, I did not get paid for this. I want my $275 facilitation fee like for this hour. But no. And so it was even much more taxing for me. And it makes it even harder for me to go out and do my work in my community when I'm constantly having to train and teach white people how to interact with their other white counterparts. And so I really support topic odd item number two. I don't know how you all feel about it.
Babatunde, you wanna? I feel like I talk a lot. So,
I mean, I think it's great, you know, if white folks will get over their fear of talking to other white people. Because I've okay.
But he's gonna be mad at me.
Don't look at me like that. That's generally what I've heard from folks. You know, I have had white partners in the past, you know, tell me that their parents are on board and everything's okay. And then the first year I meet them, invite them over for Christmas, and their mother says the N-word like four times in my house.
Oh my gosh.
That's the first time meeting this person, you know. And I'm like, well, how do we end up here? You know, you said that you had talked to your parents about like racial justice and what that means in this political moment. When ultimately it's just like, well, that's a really uncomfortable conversation to have. And like, maybe if we all have it together, which happened, I got very drunk that Christmas.
Yeah.
Got tired of the conversation and had to leave. And like, my holiday was ruined. Yeah. You know, not that I care about Christmas, but I was time off. Mm-hmm. So I was excited.
And you're a person of color trying to have a holiday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I mean, not even just a person of color. I'm a black person. Okay. Trying to have a holiday. Right. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think that white people definitely have got to do better about talking to their own people and get over that fear and stop using jargon. You know, Billy Bob out in the stick is not going to understand like white supremacy, but I feel like they have the opportunity to break it down in a way they're going to understand, because like what you're saying is like they're not going to listen to us, you know? So that's the opportunity for white folks to kind of interject themselves and do something extremely productive to dismantle white supremacy.
Yes. I don't feel like I have anything to say because I just feel like the opportunity just summed it up. Like
I want to expand and just say 100% stop using jargon.
Yeah. I mean, folks. Not even just like white folks, but like as we were talking about like reaching our community, like that's why people get so turned off by the social justice warrior thing, is like too much emphasis has been put on what people have learned in women's studies class or gender studies class. But like, I don't have a degree. And the only reason I know these words is because I've been doing the work. You know what I'm saying? If somebody approached me and we're talking about like Marxism and colonialism and imperialism and like white male gays, I'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? You know? So I think we're also doing a disservice to our own communities by not breaking things down in ways that people can understand, and continuously using the language, which ultimately is like the master's tools to try to dismantle the master system, and mm-hmm. that doesn't work.
No.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the clearest things we can do right now in this time of uncertainty is really be clear about what we mean, which isn't really reducing systemic disparities to help mm-hmm. kids who are from highly impoverished areas. It's to really help kids who never got help, mm-hmm. right? It's to give support to people who never had access to it. And yeah, I think you've really said it really beautifully, Babatunde. And maybe now we can actually get to this break that I've been trying to do.
Because
I want to inform the KBOO Nation listeners to Cardi B,
uh-huh.
Bodak Yellow, because it's number one. Oh, I hear what you want to be.
That's right.
Okay.
Take us a Here we Cardi. Go.
Sorry.
You can with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the score, I can get them both, I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money moves. Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now and speak, that means I don't with you. I'm a boss to a worker, I make bloody moves. Now she say she gon' do what or who? Let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at, you know where I be. You in the club just to party, I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and out them bands so much, I know they tired of me. Honestly, don't give a f- about who in front of me. Drop two mixtapes in 6 months, we're breaking as hard as me. I don't bother with these. Don't let these bother me. They see pictures, they say ghosts. I'm who they tryna be. Look, I might just chill in some babe. I might just chill with your boo. I might just spill on your babe. My feel like a lake. He wanna swim with his face. I'm like, okay. I let him get what he want. He buy me Yves Saint Laurent in the new wave. When I go fast as a horse, I got the trunk in the front. I'm the hottest in the street. Know you probably heard of me. Got a bag and fix my teeth. Hope you know it ain't cheap. And I pay my mama bills. I ain't got no time to chill. Think these things be mad at me. They baby father wanna build. Say, little, you can f with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the score, I can get them both. I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money moves. Say, I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now and speak, that means I don't f with you. I'm a boss to a worker, I make bloody moves. If you a f, you get popped. You a goofy, you a op. Don't you come around my way. You can't hang around my block. And I just check my account, turns out I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. I put my hand above my hip, I bet you dip, he dip, she dip. I say, I get the money and go. Dip this high like a stove, my glitter is gold. Tell that little bitch play her role. I just a rope and a rose. I just came up in a rave. I need to fill up the tank. No, I need to fill up the safe. I need to let all these f***ers know they none of them, none of the safe. I go to dinner and steak. Only the real can relate. I used to live in the peace. Now it's a crib with a gay. Rolly got charms, a life frosted flakes. Hard to let these know. Just in case he's forgot. I just wanna check the mail. Another check from all the doctor. You can f with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the score, I can get them both. I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money moves. Say, I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now and speak, that means I don't f with you. I'm a boss to a worker, bitch, I make bloody moves.
Bloody moves, bloody moves.
Oh,
that needs to be the our national anthem. Like, just
I know. I wish I would have
so
gone live.
Good. That was hilarious, though.
Just like my.
I can't believe they
do.
Blocked off nigga. I can't believe.
Yeah, well, I mean, you,
Negro.
You know, kids who are in like middle school who are trying to get crunk I think, I don't know if they still use that word, would not want their mom hearing like words like that.
Drunk
but
on
like
the Cisco?
But like what you want to do. Yeah. Bodak Yellow.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's no. So good. We were just looking at our Facebook page and we, although we only, I'm just going to say for how not often that we post on our Facebook page, we have a really decent following on there right now.
It's all right.
And yeah. We have more than some nonprofits do.
Oh.
And I just want to say, no, I'm, my God, I'm shade. Actually, no, like I'm actually shade. Not casting shade right now. This Why is me.
What's wrong with casting shade anyway?
I'm not a shade. I've never
just
casted shade.
Just own it.
Okay.
You have so casted shade. Do you want me to bring up the episodes right now? Like,
no.
Really?
I don't even know what you're talking about, Zelda. Okay. Like, come on. So anyways, we're going to get back to the list items that we've kind of been going over. So for the folks who are just tuning in, we are kind of just going in a discussion around some items that were presented at a Race Talks panel by one of our comrades named Cameron Witten, local citizen journalist organizer here in Portland. And list item three here that's been posed is around decentering. Oh, and this is for white allies who are looking for things they can do in the community to be less oppressive.
So all the white creepers that are listening to our show right now.
This is for you, actually. And we're doing something. We're teaching you right now. This is what we say we don't want to do. So hopefully you're taking these nuggets of knowledge and you're really doing something with it to change your people. So the second thing you're going to do is is decenter your whiteness. Quote, white people were not always the legal definition of what we call white. Whiteness is an imaginative phenomenon created through institutional and cultural power and can also be erased through imagination. Even though skin color will never change, white people can change the way in which dominant and oppressive culture manifests in themselves and surrounding a community. And I feel like I just start everyone because I read them aloud and then I'm just like, I'm just going to put my opinion out there first. But someone else want to go?
No.
Should I just do it?
You should just do it.
Just go for it.
All right. I will do it. So I don't know if anyone like pays attention to the U.S. Census data, but you can go online and it'll show you like from when they started tracking it in like 1800. I think it was it further than that, 1600. I think it's 1865 or something.
Yeah, definitely not 1600.
No, I know. Anyways, it will show you what they tracked for demographic data. And so when you look at it, the first kind of thing that it has were like free slaves and then like indentured servants because they were still the European slaves. And then it became free whites and then blacks because they were still slaves and they were free slaves. And how when you look at what whiteness is, it became further and further away from what being black means too. Mm. And so if you follow the kind of crumb trails that are left, you'll see that in like 2001, 2002 was the first time it was after 9/11. So it was the first time that they started collecting data that deviated and delineated the difference between Arab and white and Caucasian. Mm. And so it just shows you over time how whiteness becomes this creation of an ideology, and it's not actually a thing where beforehand you have people who were from who were sorry.
That was a very pregnant silence.
Like what are you trying to say?
Well, you just had people whose racial identities
That's imaginary, right? Is
right.
What I'm saying. So use your imagination and decenter your whiteness because it's an idea.
Yeah.
I'm going with that.
And yeah.
I follow you. No, like, no, you weren't lost.
No, I just paused. I got caught up in my own thoughts.
It was cute. Then, you're like, I feel so strongly about
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
No, people forget that. We can't change our features, our skin tones. But whiteness itself is a fake land of that is a construct, and it's true. You can see that in the census where it has changed, terminology has changed over the years to suit the white supremacist culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's shifted, and it's evident, and our government doesn't do anything to hide that. It just believes that people aren't going to go looking for that, or it tries to keep information from them just by virtue of like freedom of the press issues.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. But it's definitely an idea, a toxic one. So I I second that, Darian. You know. You're not alone, but yeah. And so, like, I agree, like, I people should use their imaginations and step back from that and analyze it in that, that remember that it's an idea, an ideology. But nothing, Babatunde, nothing at all.
I didn't want to spend too much time talking about it, because I feel like this is also like something that could go out towards like the house Negroes. Mm-hmm. Also, stop centering white people in conversations mm-hmm. about your own personal liberation, because mm-hmm. we can get free without them. But I just wanted to also reiterate what folks are saying. It's just like, race is a social construct and has literally been used as a tool of oppression for centuries. It's not real. It's something that only serves to, reinforce white supremacy and continually divide our communities. I'm going to leave it at that, because yep. I don't want to center too much whiteness. So.
Gotcha.
Enough said.
Do you want to do number four? Or are we... Are we done centering the whiteness?
Okay. I mean, number four isn't really center. I mean, this is literally tell.
Yeah. Oh, no, you go.
Do it.
No, me?
Okay. Yeah.
Rock, paper, scissors for it?
No.
Okay. Follow the lead of communities of color. And Cameron says, enough said. Okay, I lied. Not enough said. Follow the lead of communities, all in caps. Did Cameron write that? Not individuals.
Communities.
Communities. Communities. Not individuals of color. You decide to tokenize and get all of your racial justice news from, or cred, I would add. So I feel like I've talked about this so much, I don't have anything else to say.
I mean, I could cast shade on this, but yeah, this one, but
do it. No,
well, no, I mean, it's just interesting thinking about, because my comments are literally going to be directed at Cameron.
Drag them.
Well, it's just I just want clarity around who are in the communities, right?
Yes.
Because I think it's really easy for people in Portland to see really prominent, active Black and brown bodies in leadership positions, and for folks to see them tied to organizations or work and messages that are going out, and then for them to become the poster or the one who speaks for all these communities,
like the
and
blacks.
I mean, this happens to me where I become the black gay.
Oh, I got so much to say, right?
And they're like, he knows it all. Let me go to him.
There's that trans black person that looks at me. Do I get that? Definitely been like, you're not, people in my community, as it were, just like, well, you mm-hmm. need to represent more as this cutie pock person. You need to do this, you need to do that. And I was like, when I came out, I was like, there is enough pressure already on me, like, being the first female intersecting non-binary news director in Oregon, period. Mm-hmm. And I had to say, I will be the one to decide how I present myself. And first and foremost, I hope it's human, but I hear you on that. Like, who are these communities? You know, and usually there's, I don't know about, there's that, then, see, you got me all worked up again. You do it every time. And then there's the whole, like, the way I think those who are they in the communities want you to present then, like, even in your case, it's only to benefit their structure. They're not even really like, you need to, here's the room to be who you need to be. They're always like.
People literally reach out to me as the Black queer liaison of the communities of color. And it's so interesting with how it works, and I'm not trying to be a house Negro, just meet it up.
Right.
You're like, just to be clear.
You can come into my house.
God, I just, number four, just my blushing, I'm just making me upset just thinking about it. But yeah, I think this comes full circle to one of our first discussions about community and the complexities inside of that, because I feel like this is such a huge thing. There's so much pressure on this, like, social credential, especially since we live in this world where the digital is inserted in everything. Mm-hmm. News can travel fast, and so with that is, like, not a whole lot of introspection and a whole lot of just egotistical themes and everything. I think it boils down, trickles down even to what we're talking about today. So then there's a whole lot of, like, you know, you're the gay Black, you know, speaker. Hey, you're the Black trans person for the mm-hmm. community that's in a position of power. La 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 la. And this is how mm-hmm. you should be. And it's like, you know. And then I, this is infuriating because it's such an old cycle. And then there's the pushback if you don't want to, if you're like, no, that's not actually how I want to present myself or run the ship or do or be in the community, you know. But then is that really community? Is community really supporting everybody when they're like, you need to fall in line with this plan that we have? Right. I would say adding a caveat of really, truly keep it community minded and not be pressuring people into being something that they're not, or tokenizing each other, which does really happen in this aspect. Nostrils flaring.
I mean, it kind of goes to the fifth thing, right? Which takes us back to what we all are seeking as people of color, which is liberation. And really the fifth thing is really always articulating the end goal and knowing that's what you're seeking. And liberation is kind of, I don't know, it's interesting how people describe it, right? Because what does liberation look like to you, Babatunde?
Me personally?
Yes, you, Babatunde.
My God, are you seriously going to say that?
You're on the hot seat now.
Now you know how Darren operates. Hot seats for everybody.
What does liberation look like to me? I feel that liberation really is just about people being able to make choices about their own lives without, you know, the powers that be, the power structures, white supremacy, capitalism, patriarchy, all of those things, where those are not a factor and people are actually able to live lives full of dignity and happiness and build community. And yeah, I mean, that's really ultimately what it, in a nutshell, as succinctly as I can say it right now, without getting all loud and whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's important to also hold space that liberation looks different for a lot of different people. And for some people, liberation might not be the end goal. You know, there are some folks out there who are reformists who thinks that, you know, we can change, we can exist with these power structures if we just have the right policy or the right people in power. And, you know, I think that, you know, that is definitely a huge challenge for our community. And I think that also speaks to how we are engaging with each other and communicating with each other about like what people actually need, which was back to the last point, which is focusing on the community's piece, like the community, not the person who you view as the community.
What?
No, I mean, it's interesting how the energy can shift with just the few little talks. I felt like we were so riled up.